This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePauw. This week, violinist Sarah Jilka comes in to talk about a project she started called the Bootleg String Ensemble. Senior percussionist Carly Tebelman tells us about working for three companies at the same time during her semester in New York. Piano faculty members May Pong and Claude Zimmerman converse about guest artist Garrick Olson. We talk to maestro Christoph Urbanski, music director of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, about their upcoming performance here. And guest composer Adam Gettle stops in to chat with us right in the middle of his visit to DePauw. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. The Music for Life staff is growing, and it gives a wonderful opportunity for our students to be involved in producing a radio show and also serving as reporters and the eyes and ears for you into the School of Music. Joining me to chat about joining the staff is sophomore violinist Rachel Clark. Welcome.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
So what brings you to the Music for Life staff?
Well, we always talk about keeping ourselves from being isolated from the rest of the College of Liberal Arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this radio show is a great way to kind of bridge the gap between the two schools. I'm double majoring, so I jump back and forth between the two schools. So I think it's important to keep everything integrated.
Great. What's your other major?
I haven't decided yet. It's between French and English literature.
Yeah, you know, we are the school of the and. We've got all these overachievers. So they're music majors and they also have this other thing that they do. Having a College of Liberal Arts right across the lawn, literally, from a School of Music is a fantastic synergy that is absent in many campuses.
Yeah.
And you're right. This actually, believe it or not, this radio show was started as a way to reach out to the College of Liberal Arts students and to tell them about some of the exciting things that are going on. So there's never a shortage of great concerts coming every week, and we're glad you're on the staff and on the show to help us tell the CLA and the rest of the world about it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming to chat.
Thank you.
Being a part of a school in the Midwest comes with a certain set of stereotypes and expectations. DePauw kind of defies those stereotypes by expanding our campus around the world, but particularly into America's hub of music, and that is New York City. Carly Tebelman, senior percussionist, is here to chat with me about her semester in New York. Welcome.
Hi.
So you were off in New York last semester. You just jumped out of Indiana right into the Big Apple, right?
Yep. That's exactly how it was.
Yeah. What were you doing?
I was actually interning with three companies that all shared an office. The main one was Virtual Label, which is a music licensing and copyright company, which was really interesting. And they actually manage all of the digital licenses and digital production of Project Trio, which we had come visit DePauw last year.
Yeah.
So occasionally I'd be sitting in the office and they'd be keeping track of how well the band was doing on iTunes or how well they were doing on Spotify. So it was really great to be able to connect to something that I had experienced at DePauw the year before.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and the other two companies, one was a media relations company, Blake Sedell and Associates, and I was able to work with them on press releases and face sheets for galas and other kind of public media sorts of things. And the third company I really enjoyed working with was a one-woman record label for Dan Zanes, the children's music artist. And I was able to work with her on like getting together things for the shows to take with them, working on tour schedules. Mm. And I was able to help her plan KindyFest, which is a children's indie music festival that she hosts in Brooklyn every year. So I really enjoyed working with her on that.
So is this a 9-to-5 kind of thing?
It was actually an 11-to-7 kind of thing. It was a kind of, you know, show up around 10 or 11 and then leave when you're done sort of deal.
And you were in an office that all three of these businesses shared.
Yes, there were maximum 4 people working per company.
And so every day was a little different, or did you know what was coming?
No, every day I just came in, and if I had something to finish, I did that, and then they threw something new at me.
So what's your ultimate career goal?
Well, I'm planning on attending law school next year.
Mm-hmm.
And working with Virtual Label was really great because I was able to see the back end of the type of law I'd really like to work with, but intellectual properties, copyright, possibly patent laws. So it was really great to see the back end of what people behind the scenes do, and those are the people that lawsuits involving copyrights would affect.
Mm-hmm.
And it would affect online sales and physical production and CD sales and things like that.
That's a burgeoning field right now because of Spotify and,
exactly.
and Pandora and
yeah.
all of those things. I was just reading in the New York Times yesterday that the guy that wrote YMCA for the Village People finally reclaimed his copyright after
wow.
35 years because it was owned by the record company, but there was a law passed, a relatively unheralded law that was passed that said after 35 years, all copyrights go back to their original owner.
Wow.
And it's a huge case. I mean, people
yeah.
are fighting this around the world now. And so for your experience as a musician and as a future lawyer, you really got a great peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, it was really great.
And so any connections there that help you in the future, do you think, as far as your law career or...
I do think that the people I worked for really liked me, and they do have a very close relationship with the larger firms that they work in conjunction with, the
mm-hmm.
larger law firms and larger financial firms that they tend to have relationships with. And they did say that if I needed any advice for anything, to shoot them an email, and
mm-hmm.
they would put me in touch with so-and-so. And
that's the way your network begins,
yep,
right?
Exactly.
Right. And then you go off and do this great work and are very impressive, and everyone has a very positive feeling about DePaul. And the next time a DePaul student applies to do something like this in an internship in New York, they go, hey, yeah, we have Carly. Let's have this person come up too. You know, she was good. They must all be good.
Yep.
So that's the way you got there, and that's the way you pay it forward for the next group that will get there. And thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Hi, we're members of Fifth House Ensemble.
I'm Eric.
I'm Melissa.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Drew.
And you're listening to Music for Life.
From the Student Recital Hour of September 18th, 2013, flutists Eleanor Price and Nina Dugan perform two movements from the first sonata of Georg Philipp Telemann's 18 Canons, TWV 40.
Thank you.
A few weeks ago, we introduced you to our star percussion faculty, Bonnie Whiting, and now we do her the injustice of banishing her to a desert island. Welcome back.
Thank you.
For a short moment before we boot you off. So I don't know if you've been filled in on the ruse, but the idea is that if you were stuck on a desert island with a defective iPod, no chance, and this is all the music you get to hear over and over on this desert island with just you, what would that music be?
Well, first I want to say that I think I'm luckier than most.
How's
in that?
That
as a percussionist.
Oh, you have all those instruments.
You know, I have all of these instruments and would absolutely make my own music with coconut shells and water
on the beach and a few rocks and some hollow wood, you know, tree hollowed out. Yeah, you'd have a whole ensemble full of instruments waiting for you, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, this is a hard assignment. I was thinking, oh, what albums would I... But you can't fit
you can't.
A whole album in
See,
5
that's
minutes.
The thing. It's easy to ask the question, what's on your iPod? But you can't have your whole iPod. This thing's only got 5 minutes. And this is the 5 minutes of music that really means something to you. Or the 5 minutes of music that you want to hear as you slowly go insane from...
Good. Great. Well, I'm already insane, so it's good.
It's a shorter trip for you. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's cheating to pick two very short, very different pieces
of
music.
No, I would agree.
And so that's what I think I would do. And the first piece that immediately came to mind was a work by American composer Ruth Crawford Seeger. In the late 20s, she wrote a song cycle based on the poetry of Carl Sandburg, somebody who she met in Chicago. Now, she's a super interesting composer. You know, was the first woman to ever win a Guggenheim. Later in life, of course, she turned to disseminating folk music. If you think of the word Seeger, of course, you think Pete Seeger and Peggy Seeger and her husband Charles Seeger, and that's how she devoted her life. But there was this magical window when she was writing art music, and I personally feel like my life would be better had she kept doing that. And one of my favorite pieces of music of all time is the second movement of that song cycle called Prayers of Steel. And it's this incredible piece orchestrated for piano, percussion, oboe, and an optional orchestra. So there's some incredible recordings with this orchestra. And this edgy, harsh poetry by Carl Sandburg, to me, it almost sounds like early heavy metal music. And when I listen to it, it's incredibly cathartic for me, which is one reason why I would love to have it on this desert island. You know, and even though her music is incredibly dissonant, there's something about it that just perfectly expresses this poem. The rhythm is driving and insisting. I'm just going to read this poem for you. Lay me on an anvil, O God. Beat me and hammer me into a crowbar. Let me pry loose, O walls. Let me lift and loosen old foundations. Lay me on an anvil, O God. Beat me and hammer me into a steel spike. Drive me into the girders that hold a skyscraper together. Take red-hot rivets and fasten me into the central girders. Let me be the great nail holding a skyscraper through the blue nights into the white stars.
Wow.
Yeah. So obviously an evocation of Chicago in that period of time and all of this crazy construction happening.
Maybe being able to recall Chicago and cities and that when you're off on an island is not a bad thing.
No, not at all.
Be the great nail holding a
neat choice. Okay, so you just got it under the wire with two different pieces. So absolutely. What's the counter to that?
Okay, the counter to that is something completely different. And I first thought of it when I imagined I might have an entire album to myself.
Silly you.
Yeah, I know, but I don't. Kronos Quartet has this incredible album that they call Early Music, and I remember buying it and then noticing that little of the music actually was early music. You know, there was some Musho and such things, but, you know, there was John Cage and living composer Jack Bodie, and there's this incredible, you know, minute and a half long piece by Moondog, Louis Hardin, who was a street musician in New York, who actually had support in his life from institutions like the New York Philharmonic. He was just kind of this bum who hung out and wrote a lot of music, but he wrote a lot of canons and rounds, and one of the simplest, sweetest pieces I've ever heard is his Synchrony No. 2. And the Kronos Quartet does an incredible job of realizing this piece, and they even brought Judith Sherman, their recording engineer, to beat a drum while it's happening.
Wow.
And it's just as consonant as Seeger's music is dissonant and would be my sanity, I think, if I were stranded on a desert island. I could listen to that minute and a half long music forever.
I think with music choices like this, you might have other refugees on other nearby islands coming over. Maybe you wouldn't be so lonely because they would want to hear this. What great choices. Thanks for coming in to give them to us.
Thank you.
Hi, this is student producer Katie Sherman. It's fun to play new instruments, but what happens when musicians try to play instruments they don't normally play? Hidden passions are realized. Come out to the second annual Mu Phi Epsilon Hidden Passions Concert. It will be held in Thompson Recital Hall on Thursday the 26th at 7:30 p.m. Mu Phi Epsilon, the professional music fraternity on campus, recolonized at DePauw in 2011. The Hidden Passions Concert used to be a large part of our DePauw School of Music tradition, so Mu Phi Epsilon wanted to bring it back. It was a huge success and a lot of fun last year, and this year you can look forward to hearing flobo, otherwise known as flute and oboe duets, guitar playing, singing, shakers, a mouthpiece choir, and even some rapping. We will be collecting donations at the door, but there is free entry for all. Again, that's this Thursday evening, September 26th at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. There will be a reception to follow, so come join us and get your free food and music fix.
We have three students joining us in the studio. I love these big group interviews. Let me ask you to introduce yourselves and tell us what your instrument year is.
Hi, I'm Allison Sherrick. I play French horn and I'm a junior.
Hi, I'm Megan Kessler. I play piano and I'm a junior.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Byers. I play French horn and I'm a junior. Oh, no.
Yeah, you're
sorry.
A sophomore.
I'm sorry.
You're just trying your wishful thinking, aren't you?
You want
to get out a little early. So, and you all had the same experience this summer, is that correct?
Yes.
And what was that, Allison?
We were all counselors at Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp up in Michigan.
How's that work? How long is the camp?
The camp is 9 weeks long, including a one-week orientation starting June 17th this year.
And were all of you here for the entire 9 weeks?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty heavy commitment, isn't it? How'd you like it?
I loved it. It was a wonderful experience. I got a lot of great opportunities to work with middle school and high school age kids and even fifth and sixth graders.
So what kinds of things did you do?
We did anything from, you know, being like the parental figure in a child's life to assisting in band workshops, minors such as, you know, learning new instruments and stuff like that, and being just a counselor if anything was wrong.
Mm. So, Megan, did you actually have people that responded directly to you? I mean, did you have to stay in a house and keep track of five kids or?
We stayed in cabins and we had 11 girls in each cabin and we were responsible for them as well as looking out for the other girls in our unit too. Ah.
So Allison, did you guys play while you were there?
Yes, we did. We had the opportunity to be in the staff ensembles or staff orchestra or band, as well as being in some chamber ensembles such as a brass choir or a brass quintet.
Fantastic. Did you have some neat guests there?
We did. We had the Vendor Trio, which was a clarinet, a violin, and I'm not sure who the third one was. I only got to see them one evening, and it was the violin and the clarinetist, and they were pretty cool.
So 9 weeks, did you get tired of it? Was it all good?
There were ups and downs, but it was an overall very positive experience up at Blue Lake. They do a very good job, especially in orientation, of maintaining a really positive attitude, and the number one rule is being respect there. So.
Ah, good. So was this your first time, all of you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you going back?
Yes. Possibly.
Possibly, yes.
Oh, good. Well, it sounds like a terribly exciting summer. I see the t-shirt, Staff 2013 Blue Lake. Yeah. Well, congratulations. I'm glad you guys had a good summer, and thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you for inviting us.
From the Student Recital Hour of September 18th, 2013, baritone Blake Hampton sings Hai già finta la causa from Mozart's Le Nozze di Figaro, accompanied by Gregory Martin.
Hai già finta la causa, cosa sento? In qual laccio cadea? Perfidi, io voglio di tal modo punirvi. A piacer mio la sentenza sarà. Ma se pagasse la vecchia pretendente, pagala in quel maniera, e poi vento no che la nido figurò ricusa di dare in poti in matrimonio. Coltivando l'orgoglio di questo mentecato, tutto giova un raggiro. Il colpo è fatto. Vedrò mentre io sospiro, felice un servo mio. Per mandami
accetto, che in me desto un affetto, che per me poi non ha, che per me poi non ha. Vedrò, mentre sospiro, felice un servo mio, vedrò, ben che un desio e posseder dovrar. Vedrò per man d'amore unita un vene oggetto che ne desto un affetto che per me poi non ha, che per me poi non ha. Vedrò, 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 a non lasciarti in pace, non fu questo contento, tu non nascesti a pace, tu non nascesti a pace per dare a me tormento, e forse ancora per ridere di mia infelicità. Già la speranza sola delle vendette mie quest'anima consola e giubilar mi fa e giubilar. Non vo questo contento, tu non nascesti audace per dare a me tormento, e forse ancora per ridere di mia infelicità. Già la speranza sola delle vendette mie quest'anima consola e giubilar mi fa, e giubilar mi fa, e giubilar, e giubilar mi fa, e giubilar mi fa.
On Sunday, September 29th at 3 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium here on the DePaul University campus in Greencastle, Indiana, we welcome the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra with their maestro Christoph Urbanski and special guest Garrick Olson. This is a concert not to be missed. Here to chat with me about it are two members of our piano faculty, Mei Pong and Claude Zimmerman. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
So, can you tell us a little about this?
Well, we're very happy to have such a wonderful pianist who has a long career, I think, and is not flamboyant, participating in fashion magazine. I think he has remained
true
artist. Yes. Yes, I applaud him for that. Because I have a personal anecdote. I played a competition with him internationally in Montreal in, I think it was 68 or 69. And I was not ready. I didn't pass the first round, but Greg Olson won the Montreal International Competition.
Oh, wow.
And I know I was not ready, but he may have inspired me to be more serious about, because at the time I was not dedicated to the piano as I should. I was living life. And I think he may have been somehow responsible for me to say, well, I'm going to have to practice a little bit more. And 2 years later, I won competition in Paris. So he may have been responsible for, I'm going to do it.
I think we need to schedule a rematch. That Sunday, we'll put both of you on and we're going to get this thing solved once and for all. What do you think?
I'm playing in Carnegie Hall Sunday. I cannot be
here. Do you remember what he played for the finals there?
I think it was the same Chopin. If not, it was a big one. I mean, he's...
He plays everything.
He plays everything well. I suspect it was Tchaikovsky, but I'm not sure.
Because we need to do that. Have the same repertoire in order to make it a fair rematch.
Yes, that's true. It has to be the same and on the same piano, I think, to have a fair rematch. We'll get this scheduled. And May will be the judge.
But he was
no. Yeah.
But he deserved it, and I deserved not to pass the first round.
So how important is this for your students to have the opportunity to hear a soloist of that caliber with a full orchestra?
Very, of course.
Because they really don't get this experience, correct? I mean, when are they going to have that opportunity to hear a full symphony orchestra with a major name? You know, this is a great opportunity for them.
Yeah, they would have to travel to Chicago, Indianapolis. And today, they don't have that time. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful, yes.
Yeah, and I think also with such a popular work, it's nice to hear another interpretation of it.
So tell us what he's playing.
It's the Chopin E minor concerto.
Which he's pretty famous for playing. He
yes.
does quite a bit, yes. And so he will be here on campus on Sunday, September 29th at 3 p.m. And tickets are available online or at our box office here in Greencastle. And we hope to see you there. Thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Throughout this semester, we'll be talking about the 21st century musician and how that type of musician is a flexible and entrepreneurial musician who does new and unusual things in an effort to develop an audience for classical music in America. And not just classical music, because the genres are bending and blurring. And here to chat with me about it is violinist Sarah Jilka. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you're involved as a 21st century musician in a lot of ways. You teach in the prep department.
Mm-hmm. This is my second semester teaching in it.
So two semesters teaching in the prep department as a violin instructor. And you also started your own group.
I did. It's called Bootleg String Ensemble. We're string musicians from the School of Music. It's an opportunity for us to branch out and play something non-classical. We focus on playing pop music primarily right now, and we're going to branch out and do some jazz stuff and eventually get into some really exciting classical music as well.
So I guess you guys are fired up to see Turtle Island when they're here.
We're incredibly excited.
Yeah, maybe we'll set them up with you guys and see what happens.
That would be wonderful.
So how did this group come about?
This actually came about last year in my freshman seminar. We had to create an event that the CLA students would be able to attend as well as the School of Music students. We came up with an event called iDepod. It was a shuffle concert between local bands, School of Music ensembles, and I had a string quartet perform. We played music like Sweet Dreams Are Made of This, and we had a huge crowd that actually really enjoyed us, and I got a lot of positive feedback.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea that we would, so the iDepod, mm-hmm. built on the iPod idea, and the shuffle concert. So it was classical music and then folk music or pop music or rock music and classical music all mixed together?
It was everything. We had Depok Capella come in. They sang one slow classical piece. They had some upbeat pop songs. And then we'd segue right into another group, a string group. Then we had a local band perform a few sets.
Wow, good. Mm-hmm. And big audience?
Throughout the whole night, I want to say we had at least 300 people filtered through.
Holy cow, wow. And what kind of response did you get?
We had almost a completely positive response. Everyone that came out said they really enjoyed it, and they just wish it that they had known about it sooner so they could have been there for the whole time.
Were you the bootleg string ensemble then?
We were.
Uh-huh. And so you just decided to keep it going this year?
I did. I kept it going over the summer with some friends, and we ended up street performing in just cities around where I live and got a huge positive response from that as well.
Wow, very cool. So a great experience. And oftentimes we see classical musicians doing this kind of thing. First of all, blurring the lines of what is classical music. So for example, Time for Three, who was here last year, did mm-hmm. that. We'll hear that with the Turtle Island String Quartet when they get here in November. That's not unusual. And then this idea of going out and finding your own audience. So you guys jumped right on the hay wagon, as it were, for the farmers market with Fifth House last week. How did your members feel about that?
When we got there, we didn't know there would be a stage, so we saw the slightly uneven sort of thing we had to climb on, and we were a little nervous. But once we got up there, we could see just everyone there, community members, students, kids, and it was great. It was such a good experience.
Yeah, were you nervous?
A little bit. It was cold. I was worried my fingers wouldn't be able to
work. Yeah, it
was
cold. It was weird for it to be so cold. But and you guys were set up in the shade. It eventually mm-hmm. warmed up for the other folks who played.
It did.
But that's great experience, because the more times you get out and play that, the less nervous you are when you do it. And that's part of being a 21st century musician. Lots of exciting things going on that initiative that we'll be sharing with you throughout the semester. The Bootleg String Ensemble is just one of those many things. And thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you very much.
We are thrilled to have the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra coming to DePauw this week, and even more so that we have joining us via Skype for a quick chat, their new maestro, Maestro Christoph Urbanski. Welcome to Music for Life, Maestro Urbanski.
Hello.
We're so looking forward to your performance with Garrick Olson and the ISO this weekend here at DePauw. And we just thought we might ask you a few questions. Now, of course, Maestro Urbanski won the 2007 Prague Spring International Conducting Competition and last year was appointed music director of the Indianapolis Symphony and is actually, I believe, the youngest music director of a major American symphony. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe that still this is correct.
Yes, and now you're joining us. And am I to understand that you've actually moved from your home in Warsaw and you actually live part-time here in Indiana?
Yes, I share my time between Indianapolis and Warsaw.
Wonderful. And so how is life for you in Indiana? You and your wife, correct?
Yes, my wife is always with me and we are enjoying it very much.
That's good. I know that you are busy conducting all around the country. Can you tell us where all you will be this year?
Yeah, this year I don't have, except for Indianapolis Symphony, many American dates. But I think in January I'll have my second concert with Los Angeles Philharmonic, this time at Walt Disney Concert Hall. I played with LA Phil last summer during their Hollywood Bowl. Uh-huh. Season, and they invited me for a full subscription concert. And then I'll have my debut with Chicago Symphony, which I'm also looking very much forward. And later in the calendar, there is my debut with Pittsburgh Symphony. So there are some very interesting American dates in my schedule.
And then you're also traveling throughout the world as well. I think that your position in the Indianapolis Symphony has helped spread the word about your great work and your ever rising in demand both in the United States and around the world.
Yes, I have many concerts, mostly in Europe. But, you know, I recently signed a contract with Tokyo Symphony Orchestra as the principal guest conductor. So I'll do two trips to Japan each season. But most of my guest conducting happen to be in Europe.
Well, we certainly consider ourselves very fortunate that you will be coming to DePauw to perform with the ISO. Quite often when the orchestra is on tour, it's with a guest conductor if they're doing a run-out concert. But we are very fortunate that for both of our concerts this year, we have the music director, Maestro Urbanski, will be performing here at DePauw. Now, we have a great concert coming up with a great guest artist, Garrick Olson. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to on this program?
Yes, I think this would be actually the Chopin E minor concerto with Garrick. I know Garrick well. I remember I met him for the first time in Warsaw. I remember I was still an assistant conductor at the Warsaw Philharmonic, and I remember there was a cancellation. The conductor gets sick, and they asked me to, on the short notice, to step in and conduct the concert. I remember it was Brahms' second piano concerto in the Rite of Spring by Stravinsky. So it was quite a challenging program. And I remember this is the first time when I met Garrick, and since that time we played many times together, and we are good friends. And I really admire him as a pianist. And especially, you know, he's very famous for playing Chopin music as a winner of Chopin piano competition in Warsaw. So I've actually never played Chopin with him, so I'm really excited about the concert.
That is true. This is going to be such a fantastic concert, and having you from Warsaw and playing Chopin with Garrick is going to be really a remarkable experience for us all. We share several musicians. We have several of your performers with the ISO as faculty members here at DePauw, and I enjoy very much chatting with them about their time with you and with the ISO. And one of the things that keeps coming up about you again and again is your amazing ability to rehearse without a score. Now, that is quite an accomplishment. Do you do that often, just every now and then? Do you prefer to work without a score? How does that come about?
I do it quite often. It doesn't mean that I do everything without the score, but normally the piece that I normally put in the second half of the concert, it could be a symphony or a big symphony poem or whatever it is, I'm most of the time rehearsing without the score. It takes me some time, and I just get used to work like this. But often when I do concertos, I remember that some soloists told me that when they see a young conductor without a score, they feel a little insecure. So I designed it just for concertos, just for safety, and just for the soloist comfort. I'm going to have the score with me.
This is an amazing ability, and for our listeners, it's not uncommon for a conductor to perform without a score. The rehearsal's done, and now the conductor can pretty much conduct the orchestra from memory, knowing what they know from the rehearsal process. It's quite another thing to be able to rehearse an orchestra without a score. That is to be able to tell someone what pitch they might have or what measure we're starting on or where we are in the color or the themes. And your ability to not just perform on a performance without a score, but actually to rehearse that is absolutely remarkable accomplishment and makes you that much closer to the music and the musicians that much closer to you. And the point that it sometimes makes people nervous when they're watching a conductor who does not have the score is especially true for soloists when they look up and they're concerned that, well, wait a minute, they don't have the music. Are they with me there? So very kind of you to keep the score in front of you for these performances when you have a soloist such as Garrick with you, and we're looking forward to that. We have always enjoyed having the ISO here at DePauw, and you always have a great audience. And this will be your return. You've conducted here one time for us already.
Yes, I remember. It was Szymanowski Violin Concerto with Zagreb and Holst The Planets.
The Planets, yes, absolutely. Right. And after Mars, I don't think people were riveted on the edge of their seats during your performance of Mars.
Was it too loud?
Not at all. It was perfect. It was just so exciting. And what was especially exciting for some of our students is they got to provide the wordless vocals in the Holst as well.
Oh.
So our students were performing as a surprise, I think, actually from the balcony of the house. So it was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
And so we're looking forward to welcoming you back to our campus here at DePauw and to the Green Center for the Performing Arts and to our Kresge stage. We have a very exciting and successful guest artist series here at DePauw, and the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra is always the pillar in that series. And we're so thankful that you will be with them for this kickoff of our new year. And thank you for taking a few moments to chat with us about it, Maestro Urbanski.
Always a pleasure.
We'll look forward to your concert.
Thank you.
One of the great things about being at DePauw University is that you always get to hear great music and have great guest artists. One of the great things about being the dean of the School of Music at DePauw University is you get to meet and chat with all of these people. And I'm thrilled to say that joining me in the studio now to chat about his residency is our Tony Award-winning composer, musician, singer, author, playwright. It just goes on. It makes me ill. Adam Gettle. Welcome, Adam.
I wish I were an author and a playwright. So nice of you.
Well, book writer, lyric writer, I should say. You know, it's interesting because you write your own lyrics. Not everybody does that. There's just a few of you that do your own music and lyric.
I just didn't hook up with a lyricist early on and have the great pleasure of that kind of collaboration. I would do anything to find a like-minded lyricist and get to just only write music. I mean, that would be heaven. That would be Christmas.
Yeah, but you've done it. And you, Stephen Sondheim, a good friend of yours, does it as well. And then there are others who don't. Now, for folks who don't know, you have a pretty well-known granddad, right?
Yeah, Richard Rodgers was my grandfather on my mom's side.
How about that? So that was not a composer, lyricist, and a single person. Rodgers and Hammerstein divided up their workload. Did you not get that message from your granddad?
You know, I wish I had. You know, it's a good message to get. I'm an idiot, come to think of it. You know, a lot of composers are very good lyricists, mm-hmm. but they choose not to do it because it's just so much work. It's like rats scratching around inside your head. Because English is a finite thing. You know, music is infinite. You can say, I love you 40 million ways in music. And you can come up with five a day for the rest of your life. But finding a good way to say I love you in a lyric has more to do with the context of that exact phrase than coming up with an even cooler way to say I love you. Because there aren't that many ways to, you know.
So it sounds like the music comes easier to you than the lyric.
Oh, it absolutely does. I mean, I can write a song in a day easily and have done many times. And lyrics routinely take me a month.
And so the question, of course, you always get, I'm sure, is, well, which comes first?
For me, music almost always comes first because again, the infinite resolution of music allows me to really look for the specificity that I want for a character, for that situation that they're in, for what they're looking for what the song needs to accomplish, to try to find a really specific way to do that in mm-hmm. music. And then I have to scramble around, and I've composed myself into a corner, and I have to figure out how to dig myself out with the lyric.
Wow. So it's typical for you that music comes first, and then you sit down and start wrestling the lyric.
Yeah, that tends to work best. A couple times I've done a lyric first. Maybe I'd be better at it now, but usually what happens is the lyric comes out, because it's making the rules. The lyric in that case is making all the rules.
Right.
Comes out, and then tends to be much more foursquare and conservative, and it sort of thinks in the box. Whereas with music first, it forces me to approach a song from a very specific character place and then accommodate that and search like crazy for something that suits in English, which is tough.
That is a challenge. And so we're fortunate to be performing a lot of your music over your residency and in the concert. But when The Light in the Piazza came out, it really took Broadway by surprise. It was very different in a lot of ways. And some people said that, you know, it was kind of the bridge between opera and the musical. Were you thinking that you might pull us more operatically, or was there any?
Well, you know, irony has become the coin of the realm in musical theater more and more. Mm-hmm. And I don't really speak irony. I speak, you know, earnest.
Mm-hmm.
and not always a commercial choice, I grant that. But I thought, you know, no one's done a straight-up romance in a while mm-hmm. and not pulled their punches, not commented on it, not winked at it. I wanted to do a romance. I didn't want it to be all tied up in a bow in some sort of belligerently kind of implausible kind of a way.
Right.
And so I chose a story that does have angles and is a bit off-axis, but I was able to serve up straight romance as far as the orchestral stuff, sort of the melodic writing, the mm-hmm. way I wrote for the voice. And I thought that would stick out and sort of differentiate itself from the pack in that sense.
And it's not enough that you do your own lyrics and music, but you also do some of the orchestrations as well.
Yeah.
So are you writing orchestrationally, or do you come back to it later? Or how does
I tend to do orchestrations as I go along at this point, even when I'm first writing something, writing the music. Because that is the form that people are going to hear it in eventually.
Right.
And so it has a lot to do with character, intention, what you need to accomplish with a song. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about it, if you always write at the piano, which I don't, some of piano-ness is going to leak its way into the orchestration, or often does. I mean, mm-hmm. some people are very careful about that. But I know that I wouldn't be able to keep the sort of pianistic gestures mm-hmm. out of the orchestration. So, for instance, with Floyd Collins, so much of it is guitar-based or meant to sound like hill music or mm-hmm. a string band. Piano isn't entirely appropriate, but if I wrote everything at the piano, it would hurt the score.
Right. And so folks probably know that Floyd Collins is set in Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
but maybe they don't know that it's a really unusual tale in that one character is not free to roam as many characters
yeah.
are.
Yeah, our protagonist is stuck in a cave with a rock on his foot. Inherently dramatic and fun and classic musical theater material. Family fare.
Uh-huh.
And he dies. Let's not forget about that.
Right, it is a little sad at the end. Yes.
But he dies in a good way.
Yeah, this is true. And so it's been fun for our students to be able to bring these characters to life throughout the early part of our semester, but then to have you come to campus and to really coach these folks up. And I've been watching your coachings, and they're absolutely fascinating. Your relationship with the students has been really great.
Thank you very much. Teaching is really the sunlight of my week. I mean, I try to teach at least, you know, one day a week, because I spend the rest of my time alone, and you can get pretty squirrely and pretty out of touch.
Right, because composers live in their own head so much of the time, and this is your coming out of that.
And it informs my work. I think I'm becoming a better writer because I'm teaching a lot. I have to be able to articulate what I want to a singer, let's say, in a production scenario. If mm-hmm. I'm in rehearsal mm-hmm. for a show, I need to be ready to go in terms of what I want to get from them without offending anyone, without uh-huh. putting too fine a point on it, without being too general. I mean, teaching has been great for me, and I love the young artists here. It's been a great time.
This has been really good for us, and I've noticed it's been kind of telling to me talking to the students, because typically when we have a guest come in, they say, boy, you've got to hear this concert, you know, where we're playing this we're singing this composer's music or we're doing whatever, and we feel proud of our work in the concert. And I've gotten that in spades while you've been here. You are going to be on. Yes, I would not miss it for the world. Yes. But what I've also gotten is, wow, what a great time we had with Adam. I mean, your connection to them has been really fantastic.
Oh, and I'm so happy to hear
they
it.
Come out really different people. And the rare opportunity to bring a character to life with the composer there and to really get your insight. I mean, I've watched you just say the simplest thing inside your own head. You know, this is what I was thinking here. This is how, and then watch a student come to life. And I think, you know, the rest of us who didn't write it, but are working with those, we could have talked for 4 days and never gotten that point across. And it just sparks them to life.
I think a lot of what's come up, if I were to name one thing that's come up regularly that has been really relevant to our work in the last couple of days, is this idea of not asking permission of the audience. You know, there's got to be some recompense for not being compensated. You know, we're not getting paid anything most of the time.
Right, right.
There's got to be a degree to which we want to put the material over. We have to be clear in our communication and get behind the material technically, ride the breath, all those things that are important, have our diction, communicate responsibly, but we don't have to be charging at the audience with these pleading eyeballs all the time, hoping they'll like us, because they're there to see us, you know. And if there's one thing that's come up a lot, it's just like, we are riveted by you. All these students are, they're, you know, to a man or a woman, they are beautiful and capable and compelling.
It's been fascinating watching you work with them, and I really can't wait to see the performance when our show airs on Sunday night. It will have just happened a few nights ago, but we'll be sure to feature a few clips of it, I'm sure. What's been interesting to me in this process, it's not uncommon for us to have really fantastic folks here, great performers, composers, writers, arrangers, but the connection you've made with the students here has been really special. And I mean, you've changed them in profound ways. You've given them things that they're going to carry throughout their stage careers and throughout their performing careers. And they needed to hear it from an Adam Gettle. They needed you to come here to share it with us. And we've been blessed to have you do it. And I want to say one last thing about that. We've talked about this. And at some point late in the 11th hour, we said, Adam, would you perform? And Adam's like, you got a guitar I can use? I mean, whereas most composers, we'd be like, well, no, that's another thing, and I'm not going to do that, and I'm going to do my thing. But this, yeah, yes, I would love to do that. You got a guitar? So, and for that, that's a special moment coming up, because here's the composer performing, but also we typically think composers are always behind a piano, and you're going to be behind a guitar, and you're bringing some great stuff.
Well, I don't play anything well. I play a lot of things, and guitar is one of the ones that I play not so well, and I will be playing not so well tonight. But, you know, I think the teaching for me is a little, it's like we spend our lives learning as writers and educators and whatever, and that knowledge slowly compresses inside of us. And when you meet the right students who are game and positive and listen, it springs out of us, and it's just such a great feeling to let it go again.
Absolutely. Well, you have changed so many people's lives, and you've had such an impact through your music, and we have been blessed here at DePauw to have you have such an impact through your work with our students. We're so thankful that you were willing to come here and to do this and to totally invest yourself in this time. We've worked you absolutely to death in the time that you've been here.
No, you've worked me to life.
There you go. And it's been our pleasure to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. It's been great.
From the Student Recital Hour of September 18th, 2013, tenor Lucas Wassmer and baritone Yazid Pierce Gray, along with pianist Amanda Hobson, perform The Riddle Song from visiting composer Adam Gettle's musical entitled Floyd Collins. And an old fishing pole.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depauw.edu. Our student producers are Anna Gadula, Matt Skiba, Katie Sherman, and Burke Stanton. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced and recorded by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
Music for Life.